everybody. Welcome to Table Talk. I'm Betsy Thompson. This is a place for honest conversations and getting to meet friends. I'm so excited for you to get to meet a sweet friend today, y'all. This is Sandy Upshaw. Welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Yes, it's going to be so fun. And y'all, you might recognize Sandy. She's been at Sagemont a long time. You might have gotten to meet her in the hallways. You might have known her from different seasons of your life when it crossed paths with her life. And so I thought it'd be so fun to have Sandy come and just kind of share her story, all the stories of just
it's a journey.
It is a journey, and I love that. So first of all, just first thing, because people might be saying, oh, I think I recognize her, or I know that name. When did you first come to Sagemont?
I came to Sagemont against my will in 1969. James, my husband, had an aunt who belonged here.
Oh, okay.
We had been nothing before that. We were married in 64 and
just hadn't gone to church?
We didn't go to church. We had crazy backgrounds. And I said, I'll never go to a Baptist church.
Right.
So Aunt Ruby called, and her daughter and her son-in-law were missionaries in the Philippines for many, many years.
Okay.
They were giving their testimony here.
Fun.
So I came against my will, but I think that night God started tugging at my heart because I felt something. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
And so then she called me on Sunday morning, the following Sunday, and said, would you please come back? And I came with her, and Brother John preached, and I didn't know what being saved meant.
Right.
I didn't know what salvation meant. I just knew wild horses couldn't have stopped me from walking that aisle that day.
I love that so much.
And I didn't know what it even meant to be walking that aisle, but Brother John had said, come.
Yeah.
So I did.
Isn't that so cool that you think, okay, that was 1969, and yet we still are seeing that each and every Sunday here at Sagemont.
For sure.
And it's so fun, y'all. I think it's such a good reminder for us to know that every Sunday there are people sitting in the worship center that don't know what salvation is.
That's right.
They don't know Jesus. Like, that's not that was a long time ago. Everybody does now. No.
People well, they can really listen don't. To my story, and they'll
yes.
understand what salvation really, really
I
is.
I just love it so much. So you and James got married in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you grow up in the Houston area?
I came to Houston when I was 10.
Okay.
And that'll be in
yeah.
this. I was born September the 6th.
Oh, my birthday September 4th.
Well, no wonder
Look,
we like
almost,
each other.
We're real close together.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I was born in the Dixie Hospital in Newport News, Virginia. My dad was in the Navy.
Oh, okay.
So when I was, I don't remember what happened that day,
yeah.
but I know that when I was 5 months old, my mom had me on the floor
mm-hmm.
for some reason. She was boiling some hot water on the stove, and when she picked it up, she tripped over me.
Oh.
And that was my first indication that, looking back, that God had hold of me. My scripture that reminds me of that is Jeremiah 29:11. It mm-hmm. says, for I have I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for good and not evil, plans to give you a future and a hope, and that you will then call on me and come and pray to me, and I'll listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has meant so much to me through the years. Well, when that happened, I had third-degree burns. Mm. They didn't think that I would live through the night. I was 5 months old.
Mm.
And I was in an incubator for a very long time. They couldn't even put a diaper on me.
Right.
They said a light kept me warm. But I lived. And so,
yeah.
And then as I went on, and I don't know why, and this really bothered me when I started thinking back about my life.
Right.
I don't guess I'll ever know. But when I was 5 years old, my mother put me in an orphanage in Stanton, Virginia. I have no idea why, but she was getting a divorce from my father.
Okay.
Maybe she thought she couldn't take care of me anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they put me in a bedroom, and I couldn't get out of bed for like 6 days they didn't let me get out of the bed. All I could do, they brought me my food, fed it to me in the bed. I could hear children playing.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know my personality. I wanted to be
right,
with those children
yeah.
so bad. And so on the last day, and the only reason I know it's the last day is because of what happened, they brought my breakfast, and I picked up my bowl and threw it at the wall. Little Miss Stubborn,
hey, but listen,
girl.
That's probably very warranted after that long of sitting and not understanding, and why am I here?
Yes. Yeah. But later that day, my dad, my real dad, came and kidnapped me out of there.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was so glad to be gone. But when we got to my grandparents' house, that's where he took me, I could hear my mother came in. She found out that he had gotten me. And I can remember arguing. And so, you know, the turmoil, even at 5 years old, that I was going through and didn't know what to think, yeah. didn't know what was going to happen. Well, the next step was a few days after that, she put me in a foster home in Keswick, Virginia. And it was an kind of an older couple. Mm-hmm. I remember their names were Mr. and Mrs. Short. I don't remember what I called them.
Right.
But they were very good to me. They had four grown children. Two were adults and two were just teenagers. And but she was firm. When I wouldn't finish my breakfast one day, she told me I would sit at the table until I did. Well, I was still sitting there, Miss Hardhead, once again, when the men came in for lunch. And when she would punish me for doing something, mm-hmm. One time she gave me a big spoonful of castor oil. And
ooh.
It was just so gross. So I've never been able to take castor oil since then.
No.
But
how long did you stay with them?
I was there for 5 years.
Oh,
and my
wow.
mother finally came and got me when I was almost 10. She brought me to Houston on the train, and it was great fun. It was my first train ride. And when we got here, she told me, I'm married. And
oh, wow.
so I was like, okay, you know, I'm barely 10, so I didn't
So in
really
that
know.
5 years, did you see her?
No.
Did you see your dad?
No.
Okay.
Never
wow.
saw anybody. I was pretty abandoned.
Wow.
And I went to school in Sismont School in Keswick, Virginia.
Okay.
And I remember a little boy. I had to walk a mile. It was over a mile when
right.
I found out when I was an adult.
Uh-huh. That's not just a story. You know, people are like, I had to walk a mile to school. Uphill,
no,
both directions.
True.
No, you really were walking a mile to school.
And there was a little boy. I think he was about 8 or 9. And he told me he loved me and he'd never leave. Me, I couldn't even tell you his name.
But that was sweet. I love it.
And I also saw Santa Claus and the reindeer. They
okay.
were on the roof, I was convinced.
Yeah, I love
so.
It. See, even in rough childhood, I love that God gives us little
Well, it was little,
of,
little caveats
yeah,
of hope.
Yes.
And that's kind of what my story is about, is hope.
Yeah.
And so when I got here with my mom, things didn't go well.
Okay.
The man she married, my stepfather, this is hard to say, but my mother had to be at work at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so she left very early. She worked at Methodist Hospital for many, many years. But he abused me until I was 18 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I felt so torn and helpless, and I think I understand now as an adult, when children are going through something and someone is abusing them, they don't tell it
yeah.
because you're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You're afraid that you'll either get your mom in trouble or your dad in trouble, whoever,
right.
or you're afraid that you'll be in trouble.
Exactly.
So I never told anyone until I was married to James for at least 10 years.
Wow.
And I came to a counselor, and all of a sudden it just bubbled out.
Right.
But it was horrible being at home. So I did the only thing I knew, and that was when I turned 18, I married my high school boyfriend. And he was a wonderful guy. He was a good guy. We were just unsaved.
Right.
teenagers that knew nothing
right.
about love or mm-hmm. salvation mm-hmm. or the Lord.
Yeah.
And so our marriage didn't last.
How long were y'all married?
We were married until I think I was almost 20, about a year and a half.
Okay. Okay. So not long at all. Yeah.
Not long. And he was just a real honest, good guy. It just didn't yeah. work for us. So then I went and applied for a job at Gulf Oil. And I met a girl named Arlene Nero. She was from Beaumont. And she and I clicked.
Yeah.
And we had so much fun working at Gulf Oil. But I found out pretty soon, after about a year and a half there, I found out I really wasn't an office worker.
Okay.
My boss, one of the things that I was supposed to do was file away all the files that the men on that floor, it was a sales floor, I guess they sold oil. And so I'd go around and pick up their files, but I like to just stay and talk.
Right.
So one day my boss came to me and my files were piled like a foot high, uh-huh. four stacks. He said, I'm going to stay after work and help you get caught up, but this can't happen again. And I went, okay, it won't. And so I went home and thought about it. And the next day I came back and I said, I think I need to turn in my resignation. Right. I'm not an office worker.
This is going to keep happening.
This is going to keep happening. So it was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But then I decided to go to beauty school.
Okay.
So I started in beauty school, and I absolutely loved it.
Okay.
I found out that I had a creative channel, mm-hmm. and I could do hair. But I also rode horses. I grew up in Spring Branch, and so I rode a lot. And so I had finished almost all of beauty school, cosmetology mm-hmm. now, but I like to ride. So I would skip school and go ride my horse. And I rode the Saltgrass Trail Ride,
okay.
and that was exciting and scary because
yes.
there's not exactly some good people that ride.
That's
that
where
ride.
My parents met.
On the Saltgrass
Trail Ride.
That is so
ironic.
Isn't
that funny? My dad always says, I met your mom in a ditch.
Yeah, that's
they were riding on the ditch on the side of the
road.
He thinks
right.
he's funny. But yes, that's where they met.
It's true.
It's crazy.
Well, we used to go out and ride 20 miles for about a month on Sundays
mm-hmm.
So that we could get prepared because
yeah.
that's a long,
it's
hard
a long
ride.
It's a long ride, yeah.
3 days.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a lot of wild people and stuff. I was just a crazy young girl still and kind of scared. And everything went good until I decided I wanted to come home, and I didn't want to finish the ride. And so I got in my car, wherever it was, I don't know. But anyway, this man, big man, came over and told me that I couldn't leave. And it terrified me.
Yeah.
And he reached in, and I thought he was going to break my steering wheel because he just started pulling on it.
Oh, gosh.
I got away. God just kept taking care of me and saving
yeah.
me from real bad situations.
Mm-hmm.
So James and I met when I was on a Bandera trail ride
okay.
up in Bandera, uh-huh. Texas, and that was great fun. I got thrown from a horse because it was a cutting horse, and, you know, they
yeah.
like to stop. So I'm racing, and my sunglasses slip, so I reach up to pull him off and drop the reins. Well, guess where I went?
Yeah,
right over his
top.
Head. He
mm-hmm.
stopped immediately.
Yeah.
So I wasn't hurt seriously,
gosh.
Amazingly. And so I ran into James Upshaw, who was like a big mafia guy. He always wore suits.
Yep.
He and y'all knew him.
Mm-hmm.
He had these piercing, dark brown eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And you honestly felt like he was looking right through you
mm-hmm.
sometime, but I was fascinated.
Yeah.
So we met, and he told me I'm up here with someone else. You know?
Oh.
So
okay.
So I didn't see him for a good while, and then I ran into him again because of someone who called me over and said, James Upshaw wants to talk to you. And I went, he does? So I went and called him. Well, those days, you know, there were only pay phones.
Right.
So I called him, and I said, hi, this is Sandy. And he went, who?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's pretty devastating.
Yes.
So I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I bothered you.
Right.
No, where are you? I said, I told him. He said, stay there. I'm coming over. So he came over, and we went to some place called a Onesie Meal. And we had coffee, and I don't know, we kind of clicked right yeah. then. And we dated about 6 months.
Okay.
And then we... Well, all the Upshaws loved me, but my mother met him once, and she said, he's not worth anything. Well, he didn't work much in those days.
Okay.
He shot pool a lot. He ran around with his buddies a lot, and he wasn't what I would call marriage material. Mm-hmm. But I didn't care. I yeah. thought I could change him. Well, I couldn't.
Yeah.
But God could. So we got married, and my mother came. I was working as a hairdresser at that time, and she came into the beauty salon where I was working, and she said, what's that? And I had stuck our marriage license on the mirror.
Oh.
And she looked at it, and she said, I'm not coming to this. Well, she didn't. But on... I'm going to jump forward for a minute because it was so funny. 40 years later, when we were married, on our anniversary, James called my mom.
Oh, wow.
And they got along through the years.
Uh-huh.
But he said, Marge, I just wanted to call you today. Today's our 40th wedding anniversary. And she said, oh, I'm so happy for y'all. And James said, Marge, do you know why this marriage has lasted? And she said, why? And he said, because you said it wouldn't last.
Oh, gosh.
So, in other words, determination. But the Lord became a part of my life on September the 29th, 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I joined Sagemont, became a member. But the most important thing was I accepted the Lord mm-hmm. as my Savior. And I've never looked back
yeah.
about that. I've never... ever had a doubt that who Jesus was and lived in my life. And then, of course, as Rick Wessinger said at James's funeral, he passed away on May 1st, 2023, which was horrible mm-hmm. and awful. We were married for 60 years, but Rick said that they used to have a blackboard in the back room somewhere here in the church, and they prayed for people who were unsaved.
Mm.
Well, they had James Upshaw retrobate. So that was pretty bad.
So you came to Sagemont in 1969. You and James were married. It was his family that was inviting you to come.
Yes.
You met Jesus.
Yes.
But James didn't.
No.
Wow.
He kept hiding from the preacher.
Really?
The pastor would come to visit. One time the pastor caught him. He'd just gotten home. He had a beer sitting in front of him. I was horrified.
Okay.
Embarrassed. Another time, he didn't do anything. He couldn't do anything. He just sat and talked
yeah.
to the pastor. But he said no. And then other times they would come, he'd run out the back door.
Wow.
I mean, this went
wow.
on from 1969 until 1972.
Wow.
And then Sagemont had a revival. It was a great revival.
Yeah.
Bailey Smith was here.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Pasadena Convention Center, Rodeo Grounds or someplace. He went and listened one night, but he didn't make a move.
Right.
So on the Friday before the next morning, Saturday, he left our house about 3 o'clock in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "I'm going to go get my hair cut, and I'll be back." Well, he lied.
Mm.
He was gone all night long.
Wow.
Well, when he left, I had a really bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that time, I had two babies. I didn't have a car. I didn't work, you know, because I had the little ones. And I went and knelt down at the bottom of my bed.
Mm.
And I cried out to God, and I said, God, I can't take this anymore. And I couldn't. I felt like I had come to the end.
Right.
And I didn't know if our marriage was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was going to happen. And I said, God, I don't think I can ever get away from him
right.
because he would have come looking for me.
Right.
We loved each other desperately,
yeah.
but he was just a bad boy
yeah.
at that time. And I said, Lord, would you please just take him home? Would you let him be killed in a car wreck?
Mm.
Anything. And I know I didn't have the right to ask God that, but I was desperate. Well, he was out all night. The next morning, about 9 o'clock, he comes walking through the door. He was very sheepish looking, very ashamed. And you cannot even imagine the anger that I felt.
Yeah.
And it's a wonder I said some things and did a couple of things that he didn't just knock me across the room. Mm. But he didn't. But we're in this heat of this battle, and the doorbell rings. And I opened the door, and there was John Morgan and Bailey Smith. And I'm like, whoa. So they came in, sat down. I said, would y'all like coffee? So I go in to make coffee. All that came out was hot water. My hands were shaking. Yeah. I was so nervous. I didn't know what to do or what to say. So finally remade it. I had just given everybody a cup of coffee and sat down beside James. And John looked at him and he said, James, what are you going to do about Jesus? Mm. And just like that, James said, accept him.
Oh, wow.
So it was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, huge all that time. And I was doing hair in my house at that time. And I can't remember their names. Warnell, I think. Deborah and her husband, you may remember. Jason, but I don't. But she came by to get her hair done. And for some reason, a God thing, her husband came with her that day. And he said, hey, James, we're having revival. Why don't you come to church tonight? Well, James had already accepted Christ. And he said, well, maybe I will. He didn't even tell him that he had accepted the Lord.
Huh.
And he left, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he said, I'm hungry for some fried oysters. Well, it had started at 6. So that was an ordeal. I had to fry oysters.
Oh, my God.
I had to, you know, and I'm, once again, I'm a nervous wreck. I'm trying to figure out what to do with my babies. We brought them to church. Thank goodness there was a nursery.
Uh-huh.
It was just crazy, and I didn't know what was going to happen. But when the invitation came, I think on about the third stanza, all of a sudden, James stepped out, and he walked the aisle. And our lives did change tremendously.
Yeah.
But one thing he had said to me back when we were dating, and of course we weren't Christians, we broke up after about 6 months because he wasn't interested in marriage. And I said, well, I think I want to break up.
Right.
So he left, and I didn't hear or see him for 2 or 3 weeks. And then he called me one day and said, I want to come over and talk to you. And I said, okay, come on. So he came over, and he said, I've been thinking about it. He said, why don't we get married? If it doesn't work out, we'll get a divorce.
Oh.
And I said, okay.
Oh, gosh.
I know it. Isn't that just the craziest thing? So, you know, God was walking along beside us, and I'm sure he was looking at us and really shaking his head and saying, I don't know if this is savable or not. And so, anyway.
I love that God knows our stories.
He
you know?
Does.
And,
you know, my
so
favorite
good.
Saying these days is, but God.
Absolutely.
So many things. We would definitely have been divorced, but God somehow held us together.
Yeah.
Things would have happened, terrible things, but we kept going.
Yeah.
And then I thought of another verse because by that time I was pretty grounded here at Sagemont, and I was asked to be on the Sagemont Women's Council, and I did that, and it was a 3-year stint, and I did so much growing when I was on the council because Kelly Holloman, Jennifer Sapaw, so many, Pat... oh, I can't think of her last name. Her husband's the vet.
Godwin.
Yes, Pat Godwin. So many mm-hmm. ladies. Sharon Brown. Mm-hmm. We were all on that council together. It was so fun. And a verse that came to me when I joined the council says, Joshua 1:9, it says, I have commanded you to be strong and courageous. Yeah. Well, I was pretty nervous because I didn't know anything about the council. And the Lord said, do not tremble or be dismayed, because I'm the Lord your God, and I'm with you wherever you go. And that meant so much to me. So in 64, we were married. In 65, I had Michael. Okay. And he was my precious, oh my gosh, I loved that baby. He was just the apple of my eye. And then in 69, my daughter Lisa was born, and I loved her just as much. Now, Lisa was a mama's baby. Mm-hmm. She lived on my hip from the minute she was born. I'm cooking, she's on my hip.
Right.
I'm cleaning, she's on my hip. That went on until she was five, and I couldn't carry
right,
her anymore.
Yeah.
So, but we were always a close family. And then, you know, as time grows and children start school, things happen. Lisa was strong-willed. She still is. Michael was just such a good boy, but he had growing pains like a lot of teenagers yeah. did. And he was, I think he was 23, and he went out with a friend of his one night, and they were over on the other side of town. He had forgotten his ID, so when they went in a place, some kind of a club, they told him he had to leave. So he left. So they went back because there was a little girl that lived in our neighborhood who asked him, she worked there, she asked him, would they take her home? Mm-hmm. So they went back at closing, and when they got there, one of the guys who enforce things at places like that came out to the car and said, we're closed. And Michael said, well, we're here to pick up so-and-so. And he said, you can't stay here. And he just reached through the car window and hit my son in the jaw pretty hard and hurt him. Well, these two boys drove off. They were angry. They said, he can't do that. So they went back.
Oh,
well, when they went back, nobody was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was dark. And so Troy told us later, Michael was real concerned about this little girl. Where was she? Well, Michael got out of the car. I guess he was going to look. And a security guard came around the corner about 400 yards away, about the length of a football field, the police told us. And Michael saw him. He didn't know who he was. It scared him. And he reached in the back seat of the car, and he picked up a tire tool that was laying there. And he held his hands out, and he said, we're not doing anything. And the policeman fired in the air. And Michael went like this. And when he did, the man pointed his gun at him and shot him and killed him instantly.
Oh, my gosh.
It was awful.
Yeah.
I got up in the morning because his little girlfriend had called about 4 o'clock. They had been dating. Her name was Stacy, and they were in love. They were about to get married. She said, Miss Upshaw, have y'all talked to Michael? And we said, no, why? What's wrong? And she said, I think he's in the hospital. I think he got hurt. So, you know, we didn't know what to think. So we started calling hospitals. We started calling everywhere. So it was about 10 minutes to 6, and I sort of had a bad feeling, so I ran and jumped in the shower. And James had turned the television on. And when I came back in from my shower, the 6 o'clock news was starting, and they said something about a murder, and they didn't show anything but his body.
Oh, gosh.
But they didn't show just like from the waist down, and I recognized his shoes. And I said, oh, James, that's Michael. So
we didn't know what to do. I mean, we didn't know where to find him.
Right.
We didn't know anything. But I called Brother John, and Beth said, he's in the shower. And she said, he has a funeral, but he'll try to come by before. So he did. He came by. And I'll tell you right now, if it weren't for Sagemont Church, if it weren't for God, James and I definitely would have gotten a divorce because it was so traumatic for both of us. Mm-hmm. And it was traumatic for my daughter.
Yes.
She suffered many, many hardships and heartaches because of that. And little by little, because of the church, because of the wonderful people at Sagemont, I'm telling you, people came. People loved on us. One lady I didn't meet until maybe, that was in 89 when he died. And at the end of 89, Brother John invited myself, Paula Monroe, Paula Pennington, who used to belong here, and Pat Medlin, that he'd gone to school with. He and Beth were going to Africa on a hunting trip, and he invited us to go. Mm-hmm. So James said, go, it'll be good for you.
Yeah.
So we did, and when we got back, Ann Bowman, I met on the trip.
Okay.
I didn't know her.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann Bowman is the wonderful grandmother to Jonathan Morrison that mm-hmm. we know and love. And she's the mom to Terry Morrison, who is exactly like her mm-hmm. mama. And she loved me from the minute we met. We loved each other.
Yeah.
We were so close that I called her my mama, my sister, my best friend,
mm-hmm.
because she was that on any given day.
Right.
And back when James was running and not doing what God wanted mm-hmm. him to do, sometimes I would get so frustrated. I would call her, and she always talked me through it, and she would say, but don't forget, we love him, and God loves him. And as Justin, Lisa grew up and finally gave me a beautiful grandson.
Fine.
Justin, he's my precious heart. I love him dearly. And he went to camp here, grew up here at Sagemont, went to China on a mission trip, vowed to be a missionary. But things got in the way of his life, and he had a tough life growing up, and so his father wasn't in the picture.
Right.
So that was really hard. But Wes Holloman loved Justin from day one. Back when Wes was a student minister, he had Justin in Bible study. They did that thing where they came to the kids' homes and went in their room.
Uh-huh.
They did that to him at camp one time. Justin was really heavy in those days, and he was very self-conscious mm-hmm. of it. And one of the counselors at camp tried to get him to climb this fence, and he wouldn't do it. He said, I can't do it.
Right.
So he stayed there with him until he did it. And so the church helped him overcome so many obstacles. And then Justin moved in with James and I because of some difficulties. And he came in one day and he said, Nana, will you cook healthy for me? And I said, of course I will. Well, I did. And he started watching what he ate. And I said to him one day, Justin, you would do so much better if you just exercised a little bit. I don't like exercise.
Right.
So James and I looked out our window one day, and there's a little mound out there because we live on the 12th hole of the golf course. And Justin was kind of running up and down the mountain. And I was like, wow, James, he's exercising. So we didn't dare say anything.
Right.
And so a lot of things were going on right then, but I just kept clinging to
but God, if it weren't for you, this wouldn't happen. This wouldn't happen. Well, the next thing we knew, Justin started running.
Oh, wow.
And he did it and lost 135 pounds in a year on his own.
Wow.
And he was thin and he's doing well right now and happy. And I'm so proud of him.
That's so good.
When I went to work, there was a girl named Ann Vandegrift that was here at Sagemont. She did all the painting in the children's building. Do you remember seeing the walls?
Yeah,
she did all of that. And she decided she wanted to open a beauty salon. So I went to work for her. And shortly after that, though, my mother-in-law, James's mom, who was the sweetest lady on earth, she was a tiny little thing. She had given me a gift certificate. And, of course, when you get a gift certificate, you can't wait to go spend it.
Right. Right.
So I left the house on a Monday night because the store was open until 9, and it was pouring down rain. I had no business at all even leaving the house, and I was getting onto the Gulf Freeway. We lived on Edgebrook at that time in a little bitty house, and a bus, like a big Trailways bus, his brakes went out and the cars were stopped because of traffic, and he hit me from the rear. Well, it broke ribs. It gave me a concussion. It damaged my leg. They put me in the hospital. I was in the hospital for 3 months.
Oh, my gosh.
It was terrible. Lisa was about 18 months old. Michael was 3. James was working. My mother-in-law literally had to quit her job to come and stay with my children.
Wow.
So while in the hospital, I started healing from various things, and more things kept happening. Patsy Hogg called me every single day because all I did was cry for 3 months. I wanted to come home and be with my babies.
Sure.
And so the doctor decided to get me up. I was confined to the bed for about 7 weeks. So I don't know why, but they called in. I do know why. They did done some damage to my back, and I had several broken ribs. And the doctor came in. He said, "I want you to get up." It was an orthopedic doctor. And as he got me up to walk me a little bit, my leg swelled up to about this big around, and it was solid black. And he immediately put me back in bed, and they did some tests, and I had a large blood clot in my groin, and they were afraid that it was going to my heart and lungs. So I was once again confined to the bed. They brought heparin shots 3 times a day, which is a strong blood thinner. And of course, they put them in my stomach, which hurt.
Yeah.
More crying out to God. And one night, I'll never forget this. Nobody, I had a private room, which I was thankful for that. But you know, they have a little nightlight in your room. But I was crying, and I was praying, and I was asking God for help. I can't prove that it was the Lord Jesus, but I know that it was because I saw someone standing there. And I heard audibly a voice that said, "You don't have to worry about this anymore. It's taken care of." Something like that. I don't remember the last part. I do remember, "You don't have to worry about this anymore." And the next morning, lo and behold, my doctor came in and he said, "Guess what? I have good news." I said, "What's that?" "No more heparin." I went, "Oh, good. And you get to go home today."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I got to go home, still confined to the bed for about 6 weeks. And because of all that damage, I couldn't do hairdressing anymore. Couldn't stand on my feet for long periods of times. And I had several damaging blood clots through the years. Well, as a result of that, later on, I think it was in 88, but before that, James was a construction worker from the time we got married until we moved to a house, Sage Plum in Sage Meadow, and we lived there for about 23 years, and then we
built a house where we are now. And but he was a construction worker. His uncle was a union man. And James worked in construction for a long time. Well, because I went to work for a direct sales company. It was called Home Interiors and Gifts. I don't know if you ever went to one of their parties or not, but the lady that owned it was Mary C. Crowley. She built the Mary C. Crowley building at First Baptist Dallas. She was the most godly woman you'd ever want to meet. And she liked me, and she encouraged me. I became a manager. I was high sales in the nation 2 different times, won all kinds of things. I won a trip to on a cruise, or won a diamond ring. Right. You know, I was just doing all kinds of stuff. And but when I became a manager is where I really grew as a Christian, because she would say to us in sales meetings, she would say, God doesn't just own the mountains. He owns the cattle on the hills. He gives us food when we think we're not going to have anything to eat. He provides for us. She told us things like that all the time. And the way that she taught her sales meetings, when we'd go to a convention, like she took us to Montana and to Colorado, it was a blessing. I'd never been any place like that. And so we would sit on the side of the mountain on a blanket while she would talk. And I'll never forget her sales talk one day. It was about Lydia in the Bible. Mm-hmm. She said she was the first sales lady, girls. She went and sat at the gate and sold her beautiful purple cloth. And so she says she was the first sales lady ever.
Yeah.
So I would learn things like that. Uh-huh. And I held lots and lots of home interior parties. Sagemont ladies stepped up. They had parties in their homes. They would let me come in. And it was great fun. And then my husband decided he couldn't iron work anymore because he had broken his leg.
Yeah.
So he went to realtor school and became a real estate agent. Well, that was a traumatic time in our life because James only had a 10th grade education.
Wow.
Studying was quite difficult for him. And he was always going, shh, shh. So you can imagine how that was. We were on our way to New Bronzeville one time. Shh, shh. My poor kids, they suffered through all of that. But he became a realtor.
Okay.
He was the number one salesperson in Sagemont. His picture was always in the paper. It was just incredible.
That's fun.
Then Brother John said he'd never seen anybody like him. And when he was saved, Brother John said from the pulpit several years later, he said, you know, we chased James Upshaw. We couldn't get him to be still. And he said, but when he accepted Christ, it was like Saul on the way to Damascus. Mm. And it was.
Right.
I mean, it was
going back and making a difference with
people.
A
total difference.
That's amazing.
It was like,
I love it.
Yeah. So
so good. And so y'all, he worked. He was a real estate agent. Y'all were here.
And the interest started going up.
Yeah.
Like 18%.
Right.
Well, we had football tickets to the Houston Oilers, and we went to all the home games. Well, we met these people, one guy in particular who sat in front of us. His name was John Polk. And we happened to get season tickets right in the middle of their group. We don't know. They were on the side of us and in front of us. But so we always had fun with them, and we even would go to each other's houses and cook when the games were away. And so the interest rates were going up, and James leaned over to John one day and he said, John, we're going to starve to death. He was a realtor. If we stay in this business. Mm. Well, John was married to a girl whose father was a judge in Harris County. And he had been talking to the judge, I think, about the same thing. And the judge said, why don't y'all do bail bonding? And he turned around to James. He said, why don't we start bail bonding? And James went, bail bonding?
Right.
He was shocked.
Yeah.
And so he came home and told me, and I went, oh, James, that's just terrible people. And he said, I don't know. He said, I'm going to talk to Brother John.
Yeah.
So he came in and he asked Brother John, what do you think? And Brother John said, James, it's a service. You're giving people a service. So James started bail bonding. He was very successful in it. We bonded people from all walks of life. We have bonded people from Sagemont Church.
Yeah.
People's lives get tangled up sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
God's the only answer. We know that now, but a lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. So our bail bonding business was a ministry. I used to talk to judges about the Lord.
Right.
James never liked to go to the courthouse because he didn't like to be in front of a judge, period. So Frank Hale, who used to be a member mm-hmm. of his church, and he's been a great lawyer yep. for the church as well as a member. He was on the bench one time, and I had to get a paper signed, and he called me out loudly. The whole courtroom stopped talking and turned around, and he said, "You go to Sagemont Church, don't you?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, what do you feel about abortion?"
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my goodness. You know, these are lawyers that are not saved. These are lawyers that are liberal, a lot of them. There are very few Christians in that industry, I hate to say. But God gave me words. I answered him. It made it easy. I walked out. I was humiliated, embarrassed, and scared to death. But I went back. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
So I got put on the spot a lot of times. But then as the years went on, things began to change a little bit with James. I wouldn't know what was going on sometime, because sometimes he would just get amazingly angry. Mm-hmm. Like, just walking out of the office and leaving right. and getting in his car, we would look at each other like, what is
right,
going
what
on?
Happened?
So fortunately, he had someone approach him about selling the business. And so I encouraged him, and he did. And so we were so glad of that because right after that, he fell. Mm. And when I took him to the emergency room at Methodist, this was in, I think, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor told us he had heart failure, and he started getting a little dementia. Well, the heart failure was a different kind. It's diastolic, which is the left side of the heart, and you can't operate. There's nothing that you can do for it. So the dementia started increasing a little bit. The heart failure started. I noticed we traveled a lot. He had sold the business. We went to Europe, we went to Italy, different places.
Right.
And I started noticing he was having a hard time walking. He'd have to stop and rest. He struggled breathing. And so things started getting a little tougher.
Yeah.
I went to work for a dress shop because I always wanted to be in retail when we got out of bonding, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I had so much fun there, and then after a couple of years, we realized that James needed me more and more, so I started staying home. And those years were difficult, Betsy, mm-hmm. because his dementia was increasing along with his health failing. And I'd always had these dreams of, during that time I started having these dreams. I knew that James was sick. And so I would dream, okay, when something happens to James, I'm just going to go to Africa with Karen Baird and go on mission trips. And I think I'll live in Africa like 6 months at a time. I mm-hmm. loved Africa.
Yeah.
Now, we had traveled to Africa 5 times just with
right.
Brother John, safaris and like that. And then I went 3 times with the missions, and that was great fun. And then we traveled a lot to Europe. But something kept holding me back about any more travel,
mm-hmm.
and he was getting worse, and we couldn't do anything.
Right.
So I would dream that when he passed away, those were the 2 things I would do. Go to Africa, go sit on the beach in Italy, you know, stay there for half the year, just daydreams. Well, James got to where he knew me. He knew most of his friends, but he couldn't call their names.
Yeah.
His Bible study teacher was Charles Mayfield, and they were good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so many men, Brother John, so many men were so faithful
yeah.
to go see him. And then the beginning of the end of 2022,
I had my house decorated for Christmas for about 45 years. Every Christmas Eve, we don't have much family, so we always had a Christmas open house after the church service. And we had as many as like 12 in the beginning, up to when we moved to our new house. There were 95 people there, right, which was like, oh, my goodness. But we always had a lot of people. It was always a lot of fun. Brother John and Beth would come. Then as the years went on, Brother John and Kathy have been. It's been amazingly fun, right, having that. So I had my house decorated early. It was December the 9th. And I thought, I'm supposed to have had a physical because of all the blood clotting problems that I had. My doctor was real strict about going and getting a physical. So in 1988, my leg had swelled up again, and I went to see my internist, and he told me that I needed to see a specialist.
Right.
Well, the vena cava, the biggest vein in the body, had collapsed.
Wow.
And so they put stents in, and I didn't know what to do, but I just kept living.
Yeah.
And everybody kept saying, what's going to happen to you? But then in December the 9th, 22, I called the doctor and said, when did I have my physical? They said, you're 2 years late. I went in. He immediately put me in the hospital.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on. I was afraid I might die. James was home. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah. I'm going to stop you because I know this isn't the end of your story.
Right.
I know there's a whole other section of what you find out from the doctor, how you walk through James's last days on earth and what you've been doing since then and what God's continuing to do in your life. So I want us to get to dig into that.
Right.
So what I want to do is I'm going to say part one.
Okay.
We got to know Sandy. And then listen, we'll come back. And that way we really can have time to sit and hear
Part two.
What all God's been doing in the last, you know, couple of years, because I know it's a lot and I don't want to rush through it. And so y'all, I know you enjoyed listening to Sandy, and come back and hear part two. We'll do that one and hear the rest of how God is continuing to move in Sandy's life and use her in mighty ways here at Sagemont and all over the place. So I so love that you're willing to share.
Okay.
Thank you so, so much. Y'all, when you see Sandy in the hallway, stop, talk to her, tell her thank you for being willing to share her story and all that God's doing. And look for part two. We'll come back and do part two.
Yeah.
So, y'all, see us next time on Table Talk. Thanks, guys.